But I'm extremely skeptical this is possible at all. Because it's, in my opinion, it's exactly the same problem as getting the computer to write a novel. Right? That's what programming is. A whole bunch of people who are not programmers would say it's not like that, and they're wrong. And so, I mean, what more proof do you need? So, friends and enemies, delightful listeners to Bad Voltage, welcome to Season 3, Episode 32 of our little show. I mean, that seems like a lot.
So many episodes.
I don't know about you, but that seems like a lot.
The thing there is the seasons had an arbitrary number of episodes, so Season 3, Episode 32 doesn't mean... I don't know what it means.
I don't have any very clear picture of how many shows there have actually been, I must admit.
No idea.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like we've been doing Bad Voltage for about 2 years, but we've been doing it a lot longer.
No, it wasn't the first show in like 2016 or something.
That's it's getting 5 glorious years of Bad Voltage.
I know, it's just...
We're old as shit, that's what this tells me.
This is kind of what happened, you know, I blinked and like 8 years went past.
Yeah, and what have we got to show for it? Nothing. Wah, wah, wah.
It was mentioned to me. I was doing a sort of online panel thing, and I thought, my webcam's a bit bobbins by comparison with everybody else's. And then I realised that I bought it when I bought the computer in 2013. So I should probably buy a new one.
Is your current computer, that was from 2013?
Yeah, I mean, because I bought a desktop, I've upgraded bits of it. So it's like, you know.
Ah, that's right.
Triggers Broom sort of computer. It's still got the original motherboard and chip and everything, but that's fine.
Triggers Broom is not going to make any sense to any of the Americans listening.
Okay, so Americans with some education, the ship of Theseus. And I can't help you if you're American and don't understand either of those references.
No Americans were helped by that statement.
Then I don't know what to tell you. I'll concede the Triggers Broom thing is a bit, you know, locally specific.
Also, just for the record, the quality of your webcam does not matter for an audio-only podcast. Just gonna
chuck that out there. This particular point, yes. I mean, I'm not trying to impress you two. In fact, I'll go further. I've never been trying to impress you two.
You have succeeded.
Man, that was harsh.
Also, Triggers Broom, title of the show.
Okay, I have to make a note. Right, tell them what we're going to talk about.
I thought you were going to tell us what we're going to
talk about. I am, but I'm writing Triggers Broom in the notes so I don't lose track of it. Right.
Luckily, it's 2 very short words, so yeah.
Right. So I have now written down. So what I thought would be interesting to talk about, because it's been in the news a little bit recently, and I suspect a reasonable portion of people listening to this show will have heard of it and be interested in what's going on with it, is GitHub Copilot. So this is Nat Friedman, who is CEO of GitHub. Describes it as an AI pair programmer that helps you write better code. They say GitHub Copilot draws context from the code you're working on, suggesting whole lines or entire functions. So basically, the way it works is you start typing out a function, or you type the comment line that would be at the top of a function, and then the AI provides you with what it thinks that function should be. It, in theory, works for any language or anything like that, but they particularly point it at a few, Python, JavaScript, a couple of others. But part of the reason for that, I suspect, is that that's what a lot of the training corpus is. It seems to have been trained on at least all the open source code on GitHub.
Where did you randomly insert the word open source there?
From the Copilot website.
Didn't it say all the public repositories on GitHub?
Ah, okay, fair.
Isn't that open source by definition?
Absolutely not.
Mostly?
No, which gets to one of my problems with Copilot, but we're getting
well,
a little ahead of ourselves.
We will get into that.
Hold your horses, Jeremy. Hold your horses.
But the answer to your question is no.
trained on billions of lines of public code. So yeah, we have a whole bunch of stuff we want to get into, but that's going to be one of the things.
We're going to get into the license thing, but do we know what proportion of code on GitHub do we think is properly licensed as open source?
We do not know any more about that than we did when we had this discussion with Steve Wally, who works for Microsoft, about this particular point.
Yes.
Like 3 years ago, where the question is where...
Well, not much changes in tech in 3 years, really, if you think about it.
I've never seen a stat with lines of code that are properly licensed versus not.
I don't personally. Know. I mean, I'm just being facetious.
Agreed. this is one of those things.
Cold
where,
burns.
This changed when GitHub started saying things like you can have private repositories without paying and so on. But at least in theory, GitHub only let you use public repository if your code was open source. That was the rule, right? So the question is, if you put your the terms of service or whatever said if you're hosting code on GitHub and you're not
it
in
said
a private
you had the rights to the code. I don't ever recall in any iteration of the terms of service them requiring it to be open source.
You see, now I thought I knew that, and now you've got me doubting myself. I was under the impression that if you were in a public repository, so if you were in a private repository, you could store what you like because you were paying. But if you were in a public repository, part of the deal was your code had to be open source.
I think you were now, just asserting that you had the rights to the code.
Right. Okay. The reason I say this is because that has a very strong bearing on the question of is all the public code on GitHub open source or not? Because if GitHub said that it was supposed to be, anyone who goes, my code isn't open, but it was public on GitHub, was breaking the terms of service. But now I don't. Now I think maybe that's not right. Damn.
All right, let's go back to what Copilot is for people who don't know what it is and don't know what triggers Broom is. So you type in a comment, and it will generate a snippet of code that it believes is going to do the thing that you type the comment in, right?
It doesn't have to be a comment, though.
It doesn't have to be a comment. You might start typing out a function. Supposed to use the code you've already written in this file or whatever as input to its search as well. So it's not just literally a search engine. It's meant to be attempting to provide you what it thinks you're looking for. This, as with all AI stuff, is a kind of, well, that's part of what we want it to do. Whether it's managing or not is another question.
But I think it's important for us to distinguish that this is not autocomplete. Right, which has been around for years in IDEs and editors.
It's not IntelliSense.
It's not.
It's
not IntelliSense.
It is, in practice, a AI ML powered autocomplete, though, in a lot of ways.
But I'm not talking about AI. I'm talking about what people who are familiar with IDEs and editors would think of in terms of you type in the first couple of letters of a function or a class, and it will pop up a little thing, and then you'll select
down
one.
With all the matches. It's not that.
It's not that. It's more than that. Now, whether it's good or not, we're going to get into
it. It's much more like, you know, in Gmail, for people who use Gmail, they've started doing autocomplete of sentences. So you start typing a sentence, and it shows you what it thinks you should put. And
that's a good comparison.
It's kind of right-ish. Some of the time, and we talked about this in the context of auto replies from Gmail, where Jono was like, yeah, I'm all in on this. I'll just have the computer reply for me. And I'm like, I will literally type the thing it suggests rather than press its button. and Jeremy, as ever, was somewhere between the two of us.
Yeah. You know, the level in which you are a curmudgeon surprises me month on month.
I'm like, I'm not giving in, man. No. But
So just to set a baseline here for Copilot as well, in full disclosure, none of the three of us have yet been accepted to the beta. So we are not going off having used it directly. We are going off information available publicly on the internet.
It's one of those traditionally well-formed bad voltage opinions.
Well,
just,
I mean,
just wanted to throw that out there in full disclosure.
Well, I mean, you would think that those of you who are listening to this show and work for GitHub, maybe, you know, go and find the internal Google Doc with the names in it and put us at the top or something. That would be fine. But until then, this is what you get. So there've been, as with all of these things, there have been a bunch of people going, you see, this is the first step in AI replacing programmers.
Bullshit.
All these people are morons. And Just, I mean, it's not going to happen.
I suspect this is one of the few aspects of this that we, all three of us, agree vehemently on. I mean, this will replace programmers like Google Translate has replaced professional translators.
Or indeed, yes, the Gmail autocomplete thing has replaced writing books.
Yes.
I mean, have you seen...
AI is not going to take programming jobs.
Yes, no. NanoGenmo is not going to be the thing. This is... this. If anything, the pitch for this from GitHub, to the extent they've pitched it at all, rather than just gone, this is what it does, and let other people pitch it for them, is much more like what Stack Overflow did to programmers, right? Stack Overflow has not replaced programming jobs, and loads of people use it for loads of things. And when it goes down, people are like, I've forgotten how to code now, but they haven't really. And this feels like, if you want to take a charitable view of it, and you think it's worthwhile and it does a good job, then it feels to me like that. And that's exactly how GitHub describe it. They describe it as an AI pair programmer that helps you write better code. Their verbiage, their language around this is very much, here is a tool which assists you. It's, they're not
this
doing
is not
this
going as- to eliminate expertise. If anything, it might slightly redefine what expertise is, but it will augment, not replace.
Yes.
In my opinion.
Yep. I can see that. Now, there are a bunch of interesting aspects to this, but one we should probably go into early because we're us, is there has been a bunch of discussion about how this interacts with open source license code, and in particular, GPL license code, and whether this is a derivative work, and so on and so forth. So I'd be interested in your thoughts on that.
So actually, my thoughts slightly changed in doing research for this show. I'd initially suspected that it probably was infringing, and after reading Matthew Garrett's post and reading Julia's post, I think I've come... And again, Copilot is very new, so we're going on very minimal information here. But if it is true that it suggests very minimal snippets of code that wouldn't be copyrightable, taking a maximalist copyright mentality to this would, if anything, be bad for open source. And I don't think that there would be no true violation here from what I can tell of the implementation I've seen so far. So not to couch it with multiple things, but given the data that I have now, I think that it wouldn't be infringing from a legal perspective. Well, ethical perspective we could debate, but a legal perspective, I think I agree with Matthew Garrett.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like Copilot is like a programming scrapbook, right, where you're going to start typing something into Visual Studio Code, and it's going to go and grab bits of open source code from around the internet and assemble them together for you to build an application. It seems like it's generating code that is designed to solve specific isolated problems that you're focusing on right there. Now, I think if it was to pull in like whole classes or whole methods of open source code into a project, I could understand some people being nervous about that, especially if it's outside of the licensing terms. I actually think that the idea of, this is a separate question, but the idea of Copilot actually for properly licensed code and, you know, in a properly licensed setting, actually pulling in open source code into projects is a good thing. Right, I think that's what we want. This is Matthew Garrett's point in his blog post.
You do not
want
to pull in open source code in any automated fashion without respecting the license, which would be what this is.
No. I'm saying, if so long as the license is, if I'm writing a piece of GPL software, and Copilot can help me to solve a problem with another piece of GPL code, and it can make sure it respects the license and all the prerequisites of the license, I think that that's a good thing personally, because that's the point of open source. But I think where we'd all agree is that if open source code is being pulled into projects and it's being used outside of the terms of that license, then that's a bad thing.
Part of what Jeremy said is about changing views. I did exactly the same thing, and I was quite embarrassed, honestly, when I read Matthew Garrett's post, which I will link to in the show notes. But my instinctive reaction to this was very much what the instinctive knee-jerk reaction of a lot of open source people have been, which is, if it's pulling in GPL code, then that makes the thing GPL. This is clearly making derived works. That's completely unfair. And part of that was that, you look at what they've written about and they say, yeah, we're using public code on GitHub and everything. You're like, well, then put the Windows source code in it if you're confident that it's not creating derivative works and it doesn't give away secrets or anything. Have you done that? It turns out you haven't. What a mystery, right? But then I read Matt Garrett's post. And the reason I found it almost embarrassing is it made me feel like a petulant kid. Because that...
Which you are.
The thing, well, yeah, but I don't like being reminded of it. It's, the thing he was saying was, and I'm paraphrasing a great deal here, but essentially, things like the GPL are not the point. The underlying point is that we want people to share code. And we want, when someone writes a piece of code, for it to make other software better. And we want software to be able to reach out and touch people's lives. And the way to do that is you don't have to implement the same thing 50 million, billion, kajillion times. And people do share and they do work together and so on. And things like the GPL are a crappy hack on top of existing maximalist copyright laws to attempt to make that happen in some kind of very kludgy, inexpert caveman way. And.
Yep.
So if someone is taking our code that we've written as open source and is using it in other software to make that thing better, the fact that it, whether it is actually making derivative works as per the GPL's term and so on and as per copyright law is a question for lawyers. And there are a bunch of lawyers asking that question, and some have come down on one side and some have come down on the other. And it seems like quite an interesting thing if you're a lawyer, and you should get involved in that kind of discussion if you are.
I think Julia's hot take, or not hot take, explanation was a good response to most people's hot take, in that the initial line of reasoning that I think Ack and I had very similar is dangerous because it suggests that even reproducing the smallest excerpts of protected works constitutes copyright infringement, which is bad for everyone that's a software developer.
Yeah. So Garrett's point was quite a lot about, if you're thinking in terms of, well, that's our copyright and we want to stop people using that because that's ours, you're thinking the way we don't want the world to work. You're playing the gap. You've already conceded the playing field to the sorts of people who think that that is how the world should work. And that if you have a picture of a poster in the background of your film by accident, that the person who did the lettering on that poster now gets to get 10% of the rights to your film or something, right? And we don't want the world to work like that. It does, but we're trying to fix that, right? And
it's a letter of the law versus a spirit of the law kind of argument.
And that was the thing that was the thing that made me almost embarrassed, because I thought, I'd kind of forgotten that we're in this to do good. We're not in this to do the GPL. And Garrett seemed to have this much better, kind of more holistic view of it all. But
all that said, if I were to be part of an open source programs office for a company that was public, I am, I would highly recommend to all employees that they never use Copilot in production code ever under any circumstance until this has been adjudicated, because there's definitely a risk that is not understood. And part of what we should be doing in open source compliance places is mitigating that risk.
Yes.
So I think we're all in agreement on Matthew Garrett's post. He's completely right. Like, we got to look at the bigger picture here of free software and open source.
I can't believe how much it turned my view around on this. 180-degree reversal of my opinion. I was astounded.
So, as you know, I don't like giving you credit. it feels very uncomfortable. But I actually think that both of you very much fall into the spirit of his posts. Like, over the years, of the 200, 300 years that we've been doing Bad Voltage, we've often talked about the spirit of something and the bigger picture and the bigger focus of something. I think the challenge is that it's easy to get wrapped up into the debate of the day around something. The one thing I would say, though, is that just from GitHub's perspective, I think they need to make sure that however Copilot is working, that it is respecting licenses that people are putting into their projects, just because that's the right thing to do. And I think the success for Copilot is going to be to mitigate Jeremy's concerns, where you can use it at a...
Especially because it large... seems like they want a bill for it.
Yeah. Like, it's so...
Honestly, I feel like, Jeremy, your concern, or the concern of any sensible, reasonably large-scale enterprise firm who are going to say, we need to not touch this in case 2 years from now it turns out to be a problem, then people get to dissolve our company by a clerical error or something, right? That's an existential threat to Copilot. GitHub need to have some way of saying this isn't a problem if they want people to pay for it. Whether that's because they win in court and set up case law on this, or whether they just promise to indemnify everybody if it does happen or what, I don't know. But basically no one will, everyone's just going to go, it's not worth the risk to us, because if it turns out that this does make derivative works and we have to GPL our entire product, that's the end of the company. So right. We're not doing it.
Right. So, yeah, so clearly, I mean, this is a success criteria for Copilot, is making sure that the code that it's generating can be safely utilizing other projects and mitigate any of the risk attached to that.
I tell you what, I'm not kidding when I say, I mean, I was being slightly facetious originally about Microsoft putting the Windows source code in it, but if they're honestly confident this doesn't make derivative works, it won't copy some kind of actual secret function out of your code and make it available to other people if they just do the right search terms, if it really is the stuff they're saying about how the AI looks at all the code and synthesizes something brand new, put the Windows source code in it and the Office source code in it.
They said it will do that thing 0.01% of the time.
Right. But then the reasonable argument from literally everyone is going to be, but then your thing is a GPL derivative 0.1% of the time. And if you're not confident about that, then nobody's going to use it.
Yes. So I haven't looked into this in much detail, but they say that that's from the training set, right? Mm-hmm. How is the training set licensed?
It's not.
Like, what
is
the training
public,
set?
It's all public available code on GitHub, which is some GPL, some MIT, some ridiculous licenses.
Yeah, got it.
And a very large percentage that have no license at all, which means it is not open source and you should not reuse it in any way.
Hmm.
Yes.
I would guess, given all of the code on GitHub, there's much more low quality code than there is high quality code. So it seems like a weird train. Instead of selecting high quality projects, which would have been a good way to do it, maybe, just randomly selecting everything that any person ever threw up seems like
now
an odd choice.
An interesting point is, when we talked about AI and we talked about copy.ai a little while ago, we referred to it as glorified autocomplete. And
we did.
And we made the point that when copy.ai generates marketing copy for you, that you do need to go in there. It's a starting point that you need to then go and edit and improve. I'd be curious to get a sense of to what quality the code that Copilot is bringing in, where that quality lies. Because if it's consistently provide, I mean, as we all know, there are many, many different ways of writing code, and you can write incredibly efficient code that is a nightmare to read.
Yeah.
Right. So I wonder where they're striking the balance between code that is easy to read, that works effectively, and that if they're pulling it from this giant corpus. I mean, this is where I wish we'd been able to use it, because it'd be great to actually do some tests with this. You know,
we can follow up. But I think this is where, to me, legalities of licensing aside, this is a pretty disappointing product from my perspective to come out of a company like this on so many axes that I'm genuinely surprised in retrospect that it shipped.
Just so you know, everyone, Jeremy's really fun at parties.
Yeah. This seems like the kind of thing normally I would like, but I think on the licensing note, to wrap that thread up a little bit, legalities aside, GitHub definitely has a history of incenting developers to not care about licensing in a way that genuinely has impacted the next generation of open source developers. They just don't care. They throw it up on GitHub. They don't choose a license. And now GitHub kind of encourages you to choose a license, which is an improvement, but they still enable you to make code public without a license in a way that is unprecedented, I would say.
That's a big claim that they're incenting people to do that.
It's a big claim for two reasons. First of all, incenting isn't a word, but incentivizing before everyone writes into us. But yes, second thing, I agree with Jeremy. So carry on.
Right. So defaults matter.
You could argue that historically GitHub did not provide enough responsibility to make sure that people were licensing their code. But what was the incentive for people to not put properly licensed codes on GitHub?
By defaulting to no license and no prompt to add a license. It is defaults matter, and you are incentivized to do nothing unless there's a prompt to do something heavily. This is why default
smear is not an incentive.
Okay,
so am I incentivized to get fat by not exercising? Right, no.
So the incentive is putting something on GitHub rather than not putting it on GitHub, and what Correct. You get is a bunch of public visibility and free offsite backups.
Yes,
I mean using that. I agree with you that there wasn't enough responsibility on GitHub's part historically for this. Right. I would challenge that it was an incentive. Anyway.
They made it too easy for by default to not care about licensing in a way that directly I think led to the next generation of developers they're not even the next generation of open source developers. They happen to throw things on GitHub not even realizing that licensing matters, and I think GitHub is at least complicit in that workflow.
We have talked quite a lot in the past as well about how there is a culture among some of our industry where it's perfectly reasonable to make the top 10% of your product be the stuff you do. The bottom 90% is existing open source code, which you don't contribute back to and you don't help to fund and so on. And that, to me, the analogy I have for that in my head, that behavior there, but also with what GitHub's doing with Copilot, is this is like going, hey, the world spent 1 million years crushing dinosaurs into this stuff, oil, and we can use it to run cars. And the stuff that took ages and ages and ages to build up, we can now burn through in like 15 years. Great. And it feels a bit like we've got this big mass of code that has been built up over years and years and years, and now we're mining it. And it's kind of it's a resource which is not limitless. And we're not doing anything to ensure that there's more of it being produced.
It just seems to me like they're doubling down on a bad pattern that they could have easily fixed. And this is just a reaffirmation that they don't care. But I don't want to spend the whole show on licensing either.
So you believe that GitHub today do not actively care about licensing?
I think this is a reaffirmation of I think they changed their tune for a while. And now this is a reaffirmation that they don't actually care. That was just a marketing push.
But do you think that they don't? This is important. I think the semantics are important. Do you think that they don't care or that they don't do enough? Those are two different things.
I think this is a signal to me that either they don't care or actively don't understand well enough to be in the position that they're in.
Right. So you believe, I don't put words in your mouth, but you believe that because the licensing component is not a more prominent element of Copilot, by definition, they are reneging on their responsibilities for effective software licensing to be applied to this.
It's clear to me that not enough thought was given to this before releasing it to the public, I think. And licensing aside, like, I think the thing about GitHub to me is they are uniquely positioned to help software developers deploy better code, to repackage better code, to understand software engineering methodology. So much of, especially a new person's software development lifecycle and learning comes from GitHub that they're so uniquely positioned to help people get it right, and this helps them get it wrong. I mean, what's more difficult than writing code is reading code. So to me, what this really should have been, like a good Copilot to me, would have been like, it should describe what a selected block of code does using AI, not try to do the reverse. Because if you're new and you're letting this auto-complete things, there's going to introduce inscrutable bugs because you, by definition, if you're new, won't be able to understand the code that you're auto-completing. So you're not actually learning. You're just auto-completing your way through in a way that I think is actively hostile to people learning sound engineering principles.
Do you believe that spell checkers are actively hostile to people who write books and articles and journalists?
No, but if you're saying that good software design principles is the same as spelling errors, I think we disagree.
No, my point is that I think where I see things differently is that, so you could argue that GitHub's mandate, I think one thing you touch on that I think is important, Jeremy, is GitHub, massively influential company in software engineering.
For sure.
And there is not just a market opportunity, but there is a responsibility for any company or person who's influential to make sure that people are ideally operating in a way that's, you know, productive and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. I think there is a lot to be said about what GitHub should be doing, right? There are many things that I think GitHub should be doing that they aren't doing. But I would argue that Copilot is a useful tool for any developer, whether you're an expert developer or whether you're a brand new developer, in writing software more efficiently, more effectively, and getting results more quickly.
I don't see anything wrong with them doing that. Putting all the licensing stuff to one side, because I think there's some open questions around that.
Yep.
I don't see how this is an active, where this takes us back.
I think tracking down the bugs that this code will introduce will end up taking you longer and you will have learned less. I think it's lose all the way down.
You could argue that for any kind of collaborative software engineering. You could say that the concept of a pull request, you'll spend more time tracking down bugs when someone desubmits code into your project than writing the code yourself. I mean...
You could say that. I wouldn't, I don't think, framed that way.
But I guess what I'm saying is, what's the alternative? Like, do you believe that not having Copilot is better?
It would seem to me where Copilot is today... fleshing it out as a better defined, more understood product would have behooved GitHub and the software community in general, both.
What do you think it should have been? What do you think they should have put out there?
So, I mean, like I said, I think if it was trained to describe code in a way that a new software developer could say, what does this code do? And it looks through the code base, and because it can understand connections and function calls and look at the whole code base and probably understand it better than describe what that function, what it thinks that function was trying to do, even if that just gave you the hint that led you on the path, I think that would have been a better first set to understand how the model is going to work, to work out some of the licensing things wouldn't have really applied there. It seems like given the training set, that would be more beneficial from a product perspective, while having none of the problems that this has, and still be a cool use of ML that they could then maybe someday, once they understood some of the intricacies and nuances of this, then built this product.
Right. I mean, and we should mention this is a technical preview, so some of this stuff may happen. But if it was to put some code into your project, and it was to also explain how that code works, would that mitigate a certain amount of your concerns there?
But I think even just the describing first, like you point it at code and say, I explain this code to me as a junior developer would go to a senior developer and say, I've been banging my head on this code for hours. Can you help me out here? And you sit down and pair program together and walk them through. That seems like what Copilot 1 should have been.
I don't want to write a decent human readable comment of a function and then have AI go and find the function for me. I want to give it the function and have it write the human readable comment explaining how it works.
Yes.
That would be exactly. that would be a
genuinely useful
measurable service to humanity. I mean, there are people trying. So you've got people like CodeC who are trying to do this, and loads of other startups and tools and things trying to give people visibility into code, because we're terrible at it as an industry, as humanity. It's much easier to write code that you can't read. That no one else can read or that no one else can follow. And stuff which has attempted to comment your code before does all the pointless comments that you're not supposed to write, saying things like, this is an integer. It's not interesting, right? That's something is not what you need ML for. It's what you need a compiler for. And the compiler does it and linters for. And that, to me, is why the spell checking example isn't a particularly good example, because to me, a spell checker is like a linter, right? It tells you when you haven't got the indentation right. This is like a grammar checker, but turned up to 15. And what do you think of grammar checkers when you're doing writing? If I get moaned at once more about using the passive voice, well, I'm like, I know it's in the passive voice because I wrote it in the passive voice. Shut up, stupid jumped up script.
My point about the spell checker was more about of assistive of assistive tools. Absolutely. In any kind of creative art form. But I think what we're zoning in on here is that Copilot arguably should be a suite of different tools. Like, I think your point about GitHub making it easy to understand how code works, especially when you've got code spread out across tons of different source files. There's going to be dependencies with other tools, other libraries that you're using. I think that's a great point. I mean, I don't think that takes away from their technical preview, but to me, that's another area where GitHub can add value, where they can do something that's going to be useful.
I feel like what Copilot does, or is always intended to do, assume for the moment, I will spot them for the moment that it does it. Right, there's a whole other question about whether it actually does it successfully or not. But spot them for the moment that it's at least roughly doing what they claim it does. I think they've opened a door to this whole kind of licensing question, which needs to be resolved. And I'm extremely skeptical that the eventual goal of this thing, which is that it will write you code without a person being involved, I'm extremely skeptical this is possible at all. Because it's, in my opinion, it's exactly the same problem as getting the computer to write a novel. Right? That's what programming is. A whole bunch of people who are not programmers would say it's not like that, and they're wrong. And so, I mean, more proof do you need? So, but that to me is the issue with this. They've come out with a thing which has a bunch of complicated licensing things, which either they thought of while they were working on this, and you would think Nat Friedman, of all people, would have had this occurred to him, right? The bloke who's run the GNOME project. Or, so either they thought of it and ignored it, or they didn't think of it, both of which are bad. Because they didn't even come out the door with an answer to this question. Yep. And they're attempting to do a thing which half the people they're pitching at are going to be extremely skeptical about it being possible. And if they'd attempted to do the thing Jeremy's describing instead, so instead of turn comment into code, it turns code into comments, I think everyone would go, that's great. That's a brilliant thing. That's absolutely fantastic. No one's going to have a single complaint about it. There are no licensing issues, nothing. And they're like, do that. That sounds great.
I think nothing underscores that even GitHub doesn't understand what they released. There's a fact entry that says, who owns the code Copilot helps me write? And the first sentence of that is, GitHub Copilot is a tool like a compiler or a pen. Do you own a pen that just starts writing without you?
Yeah, no. It's like, not even the way
they frame it doesn't make a lot of sense, which tells me they either didn't think it through or...
Give me a break. That's just language. They're not suggesting that there's a pen that writes by itself. The point that they're making is that it's a tool that is one component of how you build software, in the same way that you've got a linter that is a tool that is one component of how you build software. That's all they're saying there, to be fair.
Framing and anchoring matter.
It feels a weird way to describe it, because that's exactly not what it is. Like I say, I think it's much more like a grammar checker than it is like a spell checker. A spell checker is mechanical, right? And they're pitching
this is a good comparison.
And they're pitching this like it's a mechanical thing, and it isn't, because the whole point of it is that it understands your code base holistically and retrieves the right things for you. If it was a Python script where you typed in a thing, it under the covers did a Stack Overflow search for that and then picked the code out of the top answer with matching tags, that would be a tool like a pen. This is explicitly not that.
I think we're... stretching the analogies out there a little too far.
That's not an analogy. That's a direct sentence from the fact. That's not very long.
No, but my point is...
So went through multiple rounds of people looking at it, and that's how they're framing it.
I don't think they're reading as much into that sentence as you guys are. And maybe that's a problem. I don't know. I read that as check it out, it's a tool, right? It's going to help you do some bits and pieces in your code. And if you like it, that's great. If you don't like it, we'll try and make it better. Like, I think that's what they're looking at. I don't think they're looking at it as a tool that's got these significant implications for software engineering. Right now, you could argue that they need to look at it through.
I mean, a company their size should realize the scope of who they are and realize that it does have implications. Like, I kind of banged this drum a lot recently, and I guess it becomes more and more obvious to me that it's true. But we have an increasingly significant Pollyannish problem in tech, and this is probably endemic of that.
So, since you said we were pushing the analogies too far, I feel I'm going to overstretch a whole different analogy. You know the sort of people.
Let's do it.
You know the sort of people who tell a joke. And then when someone calls them out on the subject matter, they're like, oh, it was only joking, it was only joking. You're like, I don't think you actually meant it as a joke until someone called you out on it, right?
You were being a dick and claiming that it's a joke.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Thing, right? So massively overstretching that analogy. I mean, Jono, maybe you're right. And this is just a tech preview. It's just like a throwaway tool. It's, you know, just to try this thing out. It's a trial balloon, whatever. It's not meant to be out there reframing the way we do software. But first of all, it feels kind of like we're reframing the way you do software. Oh, everyone doesn't like it. It was just a trial then. Plus, they're Microsoft, right? If they're not building a thing which is going to reframe and improve the way we do software, why aren't they? Build that. Don't do this instead.
Also, it's 2021. If you could build a notification system that wasn't terrible, product team at GitHub, that would be great, because every developer I know hates the notification system.
And
it's so integral to the whole product.
It's fine, though, because all they need to do is just open up a text editor to write decent notification system and hit Control Shift Tab, and it will fill it in, right?
So.
That was a grotesquely unfair characterization of Copilot purely for the purposes of comedy, and I feel a little bit guilty about it, but carry on.
That's okay. So I don't think, looking at their website and looking at the messaging that I've seen, is I don't think they're presenting Copilot as a way to reframe how we build software, right? I mean, it says right at the top, with GitHub Copilot, get suggestions for whole lines or entire functions right inside your editor. Everything that they're saying is, this is a tool that you can use to help you make software, right? And it may fill in some code, and there may be some issues in that.
Excuse me, sir. I have a complaint, sir. Sir, if you scroll down the page a little bit, it says, hundreds of engineers, including many of our own, will be using GitHub Copilot every day. It's transformed the way they work. And then in massive writing, they're quoting Mike Krieger of Instagram saying, this is the single most mind-blowing application of ML I've ever seen. And if their opinion is really, this is just a trial to see what it's like, what they should be doing is replying to Mike on Twitter and going, you know what? That's not what it is. It's just a trial. But no, what they did was they excerpted that quote in 50-point text on their website.
Oh, come. Jesus Christ. All right.
I mean, the tagline is your AI pair programmer.
Sure. Yeah, this is... Look, my point here is, look, there is always going to be a certain amount of marketing and headline, like, glitter that is thrown out there, right? I don't think any company can be necessary. Well, I was going to say any company can be criticized, but language is gearing up to criticize them, right? For getting people excited about their products. That's completely normal. We see it everywhere, right? I'm sure we can go and find many examples on the Datadog website and zero examples on the Cryogenics website, because language is going to call bullshit, okay? But my point is that if you look at the general language here, they're very much framing it as a tool. Now, the Instagram quote, I kind of threw up in my nostrils when I read that. It's a little excessive.
Yeah.
But I get what they're doing here, right? They're basically saying this is a really cool use of ML. And I would agree with Mike Krieger. I think it is. I think this is a really cool use of ML, right? Is it going to be perfect? No, but I don't think GitHub is saying this is going to completely change the shape of how people build software. I think they're saying is we're building all kinds of different tools, whether it's, you know, improvements to issues, or whether it's improvement or GitHub discussions, or whether it's GitHub Actions and all these different pieces that help software developers make software. And of course, it's not just GitHub. GitLab are doing it, and Atlassian and Track. is Track around?
I don't even Tracks know.
Maybe. I don't know.
Wow. I don't.
Typing in Track. Is Track still around?
If I remember rightly, I looked at something like the FFmpeg website or something, and it seemed to very much be a Track wiki still. But, and I was like, wow, my God, really? This hasn't changed at all. This is terrible.
Wow. The front page of the Track website was last modified 15 months ago. So I'm presuming that the entire Track community was killed off by coronavirus and the project has ceased to exist. The website looks like it was created in 2003.
The website was created in 2003, probably. That's why. It's okay, though, because all the code's in Subversion, so it's not.
Yes. All right. Meanwhile, back at the point. So, what do you think should happen? All right. So, you two are like those two old guys in the Muppets who like.
I'm
what
proud
do you
of
think
it.
Needs to happen? What do you think needs to happen? To
I was
going to
say, Act has proud of it. I'm usually not.
Yeah.
What do yeah. I think?
Yeah. What do you think needs to happen to Copilot to resolve your concerns with it?
So I think I. In detail, outlined what I think Copilot should have been and where it should have started. What do they need to do to get from
where we are
right
now?
I mean, there's.
do you think drop it?
I mean, I don't think they'll do that. I think from if they want to bill their current enterprise customers for this, they need to, if not clear up the legal perception, understand how to mitigate that risk so it's very clear to those enterprise organizations that using Copilot is not a risk. So that would be step one.
That's table stakes, right?
It is so strange that it didn't launch with something that you consider table stakes. From an actual functionality perspective, I think I'd need to use it more and actually use it myself to better understand, to give actionable feedback there.
Yeah. I mean, so defending Jono very fractionally, they do explicitly say, we're planning on making this commercial product if it goes okay. At the moment, this is partially to see how people use it. And so I suspect the how do we convince large companies to pay us money for this part of it, they were like, we don't have to launch with this because that's explicitly not what we're doing in this first stage, which is fair. I still think they shouldn't have even been this conversation about it, and there was, which means that...
But now the whole product's going to be framed as a bunch of legal and open source compliance teams have actively told their employees not to use it.
Not to touch it,
which is difficult to reframe.
And I don't understand, because I can't believe they didn't think of this. So that's a meta level concern. The fact that how you can be this involved with the open source community and not understand what the open source community's automatic reaction to this thing will be.
And not even the open source communities, but the legal entities at your largest customers.
Yeah.
Which would be more concerning to me if I were at GitHub.
Yeah, because they're the ones looking to pay.
I do think that there's a reasonable argument to be made that that there should have been more clarity on this for sure. Like, I mean, it's a technical preview, so it's never going to be completely finished, right? And I think we all get that.
Absolutely.
And I don't think you need to have all the messaging right for your commercial company customers and all the rest of it, but I think GitHub must have known or should have known that conversations like this would be occurring. Now, we're all with Matthew Garrett on the spirit of this, right? Mm-hmm. And at least from what I can tell, most people are totally fine. Like, I've seen a very limited amount of begrudgingness about this when it comes to the licensing piece. And the people who were begrudging it are the usual people that begrudge it, anyone who tends to complain about this kind of thing, right? Yes. Like, this is not new. These are fully entrenched people in their camp. But I think this, it could have been mitigated. But frankly, in GitHub's defense, like, what launch from any company ever goes 100% smoothly? I mean, there's always something that you're like, oh, shit. I mean
honestly, I feel like my larger problem, thought about the whole thing is not that it's a good idea where they overlooked a bunch of launch stuff. It's that I'm not at all sold on it being a good idea in the first place, partially because I don't think it could work, and partially because they could have put the amount of effort they put into this into something. I think Jeremy's idea is a brilliant one. I think it would have been materially more useful. And if they put the same amount of effort, turn code into comments rather than comment into code.
You see, I think that would be very useful. But there's two issues with that being the idea instead of Copilot.
Yeah.
One of which you're going to disagree so vehemently with me that you're going to try and punch me through Zoom, okay? One is that I actually think that Copilot will have a larger impact on people to a reasonable extent, because I think there's a lot of people out there, arguably most people out there right now who are maintaining software, who are actively working on software, already know how their code base works. So Copilot will add something new. Now, when you're learning new code bases, when you're joining new projects, of course, there's a big chunk of work that's going to be involved in it. I'm not saying that the commenting thing wouldn't be useful. That was not the thing you're going to punch at me through Zoom, by the way. I know both of you think it is.
Wow, I was going to say, because...
Okay, even if I agree with you that that's the case, which I don't, but okay, I can see that argument. There are a whole bunch of individual little startups and tools and people working on stuff to do the sorts of things you're describing. GitHub are big enough and influential enough that they can afford to take at least a little bit, a custodial view of the entire software ecosystem. So they can actually move the needle towards, instead of let's make it easier for people to write more code, they could say let's make it easier for people to write better code.
Right. That's a fair point.
Code that people understand better than they currently do.
Right.
Yep. And they're not doing that. They're helping people to write more code. And I don't know if that's what the world needs. And a whole bunch of companies would say, that's not our problem. We're not in this to define what software is. But GitHub are in this, at least partially for that. They're such a big mover in the sphere that they can afford to affect what software is for, not just how we do it.
No one is better positioned.
Yeah, that, I agree. I agree with everything you just said, and no one is better positioned. But that's going back to the which of these two features do you work on, the commenting thing or Copilot, would you focus on? And we see things differently there. My point is that right now, if you're an engineer, you're maintaining a project, you're working on a project, you already know how the code works, the commenting thing wouldn't add a significant amount of value. It could help you with commenting your code. That's always useful. However, Copilot arguably will do something for you. The thing that you will hate me for when I say this is the commenting idea, while very useful, is nowhere near as exciting as Copilot. It's a lot more boring. Copilot's going to get a lot more attention from the world. And I think that's...
I don't even think that's true.
There's two different kinds of attention. One kind of attention is if it does its job well, and it goes and actually does help people get code, and it gets the right code, and it speeds up progress, everything, then it gets some quite good attention for being a thing. The other sort of attention it gets is the sort the media like to whip up. It's controversial, and it attracts a lot of attention and discussion and argument and division. I don't believe that's the kind of you were talking about.
No. I'm not talking about attention, right? I don't think GitHub are trying to be controversial. I don't think they're trying to get attention.
I don't think they are. And that's the point. What I wanted to clarify was precisely that you weren't saying, I think doing Copilot will get more attention of that kind. Because it will, and it has done, but that's a bad thing to want. I wish people would stop watching this thing.
No, I think I agree with you, and I don't think that was their intention.
Right.
I just think that Copilot is a sexier thing than a similar feature, or a different feature rather, that will go and help you to understand and comment code.
I mean, for my
I do. I mean, again, I think the commenting thing that you're talking about should happen. And I think the point that I think Jeremy made,
I think it's more than just commenting. Earlier, if you frame it just as commenting, that maybe wouldn't be as exciting.
Helping people to understand how to read code and understand it.
If you want your AI pair programmer, it would be more akin to me what I described than what Copilot is. Because when a junior, like I said, to me, a pair programmer is when a junior developer sits down with a senior one. And if you look at what really the junior person wants out of that interaction, it's not Copilot.
Yeah. And if you watch actual pair programming, there are a bunch of people who think that the pair's job is sit there and go, oh, you missed a quote mark there, not what they're for.
Yeah. Do you know what my biggest disappointment with Copilot is, though?
That it's not pronounced Copilo.
It shall be, from the rest of this conversation, be pronounced Copilo. All right. My biggest disappointment with Copilot is that I think they missed out on a massive opportunity to, instead of putting code into these projects, to put Iron Maiden lyrics.
That doesn't seem that hard, dude.
That's what needs to happen.
I bow to nobody in my respect for Maiden and their songs and everything, but I feel like lyrically they're not that challenging.
That's more of the spell checking kind of approach.
Sorry, Bruce, if you're listening, and there are some good ones, right? Passchendaele was good, don't get me wrong, but I feel like the Markov chain stuff we had in the 70s, you know, that Eliza thing where it was like, you know, I found a spoon. Do you like your spoon? Tell me more about your spoon. This is the kind of Maiden level, I think.
Are you saying that Iron Maiden's formula of repeating the song title four times in a row for a chorus, it doesn't work very well?
I mean, we literally already have this for AC/DC.
So, a brave new world.
The Python script that someone wrote to clone AC/DC songs created Airborne. So.
All right. I am obviously speaking in jest. What else, is there anything else that we haven't touched on as we delve down this particular pathway?
No, I mean,
I feel like we've covered pretty much about everything, haven't we?
I agree.
Yeah.
Do you think GitLab are gonna compete with something similar?
Well, no, because they're not big enough. I don't think.
They're pretty big.
And they don't have access to OpenAI or that similar services.
This is the thing. You know,
air quotes, OpenAI.
Yeah. Hi, we've decided to rebrand as Closed AI, just in case you were wondering. This is, you know how every time we get access to like cool new hardware, the universe responds by creating stuff that it can't do, so you have to stay on the upgrade treadmill forever, right?
Yes.
The sorts of software that can be built seems to work a bit like that as well. So we used to have a world in which you had to go to software companies to buy software because people could just write naughty little games at home or whatever. And then we went, okay, we'll invent the open source methodology. And now we're at a point where you can build big software like this as part of an open source community. And so the universe went, ha, 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 now we're going to build a world in which you have to have 55 billion, billion, kajillion piles of data and a data set and an entire like farm of PCs to get any work done. Which means that only Google and Microsoft and Apple get to play and ordinary people don't again. And it seems really annoying. I mean, this is sort of a meta complaint about the software industry as a whole, but it seems that every time we get to the point of going, you know what, it turns out we don't need to go cap in hand to one of eight large companies. The eight large companies go, turns out you do again. Would you believe it?
This is the regular complaint about capitalism.
I mean, don't get me wrong. This is, you know, my this is Stuart's Karl Marx corner.
I was going to say, and that, dear listener, marks the end of another excellent Bad Voltage episode.
Europe is haunted by the specter of communism once again, but I do think it's kind of interesting that because a whole bunch of stuff is AI and ML. And now I've tried looking at a few of these projects and it's almost impossible to hack on because step one is download this 73 gigabyte PyTorch data set or whatever.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating. Yeah. And fine, you know, now Zoom can replace the background for you. And as long as you're not wearing headphones, which it will cut out because they're not actually ears, great. And that needs AI now for reasons that I don't understand, but you know, whatever. But it does seem kind of, do you not find this occasionally frustrating?
Not really.
A little, but the way you articulate it, I find it more amusing than anything.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm taking a not insignificant amount of pleasure. Can you keep talking?
We'll just slowly fade out with you still going.
Yes, no. Me being despairingly sad about the software industry is not how we want this to go.
When did you become our Tory Amos?
That's a good question. Listeners, when did I become Tory Amos?
Yeah, I mean, you've always been... way of describing this is a erstwhile and amusing cynic.
I'm going to start writing poetry in the show notes next.
That'd be brilliant.
Oh, man.
World, you might not know this about Stuart Langridge, but he's actually an excellent poet. We still have that poem you wrote for us for our vow renewal, I think it was.
Yeah, when you renewed your vows. Yeah, blimey.
Yeah. He's an excellent poet. I feel very uncomfortable applying credit to him, but credit where credit's due. Who would have thought
that is twice in one episode, which absolutely is a record for Bad Voltage.
I know. Marius, can you cut this out? Can you cut this bit out, please?
Yes. Oh, yeah. So, yes, thank you very much, Marius. Who we mentioned there is Marius Quarterback of NerdZoom Media, who does all our editing. Thank you very much, Marius.
Wonderful work.
NerdZoom.media for all your video and video and audio editing skills.
Are you having a stroke right now?
I can't speak. What the hell's wrong with me? But yes, go to nerdzoom.media.
The GitHub death ray has been enabled.
I know, right? You see, this is what I had a go at them, and now there it is.
Who would have thought that we'd start talking about Copilot and end with poetry? So
it's been quite a journey.
It's been, yes. It's been a journey. And thank you, listeners, for joining us on this journey. See, that's a nice segue. All right. Before we wrap up, anything, do you guys have any plans, anything exciting that you want to share before we close out? I think anything you want to point people towards? Has Datapig got a new product out, Jeremy?
We will point them towards the forum, where I am genuinely curious what the Bad Voltage community thinks about Copilot. It's been an interesting episode in that we very much agree on a couple aspects and clearly very much disagree on a couple aspects.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to hear what the Bad Voltage community thinks.
Definitely. We had a fairly long, detailed discussion back in 2017 called The Issue of Licensing on the forum. And that was about GitHub's lack of effort in helping people make sure their code was correctly licensed and correctly open source and so on. So, it might be worth looking at that before unearthing that conversation again. But has it changed in the last 3 years? Have they done anything different? What are your thoughts on Copilot? I would be very interested to hear. So, community.badvoltage.org.
Yes. And also, if for some reason I am not on the next episode of Bad Voltage, it is because my wife, who works at GitHub, has listened to this conversation and has murdered me in my sleep, even though I'm not responsible. So
we're all sorry, Erica.
In a similar way to John McAfee, if I am murdered, it wasn't me, okay? It was Erica. Just so we're clear.
Goodbye.
All right.
Thanks for listening.
Peace out.